Thanks for joining us. This is Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. We continue our coverage on some of the developments regarding telecommunications as well as the utility of it. Very recently, GSMA, or the Global System for Mobile Telecommunications Association, has ran a survey on this, and some interesting findings were unearthed, including 96% of the population in the Asia-Pacific region actually use mobile networks. However, there's some issues when it comes to the ability for them to use mobile internet service, because only 44% of the population of Asia-Pacific, which comes to about 1.23 billion, so about 400 million of us, are only using it for mobile internet service. This is something of an interesting element, because when you see broadband networks covering 96% of the population but only 44% using it, what is the story behind it? So because of this, GSMA Head of Asia Pacific, Julian Gorman, joins us from Singapore. Julian, let's run through with some of the findings of your survey. Perhaps you can walk through us when it comes to the Digital Societies report and what it means to the rest of us.
Sure. So we published our Digital Societies report yesterday. And I mean, for 5 years now, we've been tracking the development of digital societies across Asia Pacific. And in that tracking, we have an index where we measure a number of factors like mobile broadband penetration, coverage, adoption, amongst other factors, to create an index. And it's a measure of the progression of a country towards towards becoming a fully functioning digital society. And across the region, there is a great diversity between countries on how far mobile broadband has penetrated. And the diversity ranges from, you know, advanced countries like Korea and Singapore, where you're talking like 85%+ of the population using mobile broadband. I was just saying that across the region, it varies greatly, and you've got the advanced countries like Singapore and Korea at 85%+ mobile broadband usage and also 95%+ coverage. But then there's a number of countries in the region, especially some of the large ones like India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, where mobile broadband coverage is high, but actually adoption is quite low, like less than 40%. And that the difference in there we call the usage gap, and that's what we think is, or it needs to be the focus of a number of markets, as how do we reduce that usage gap? Because as we move forward to a digital society and into the 5G era, actually getting people on mobile broadband and getting the population connected and online is actually a very core foundational step to being able to move forward towards 5G.
Now, we need to talk about 5G and the progress that is currently happening around the Asia-Pacific region, and perhaps you can even comment on some of the developments here in this country as well. But in the region, per se, how has the spectrum allocations been going? How has the rollout been going, particularly in this part of the world of Asia-Pacific, i.e. Southeast Asia?
Sure. I mean, we see 5G rollout and adoption is actually going faster than any previous generation. You know, we're expecting globally this year to pass more than 1 billion users of 5G. And by 2025 in Asia Pacific, we're expecting over 400 million users, which is around 14% of the total population, of users. Now, globally, we think the number is more like 25%. And there is, you know, obviously in big markets like China and the US driving. But the advanced markets, even in Asia Pacific, again, Korea, Japan, Australia, will by 2025 be at 65%+ 5G adoption amongst consumers. Now, it's important to differentiate that from enterprise use and the adoption, because that is really the economic potential of 5G, is the transformation that 5G can drive in enterprise use cases. And when you talked about that, then I mean, Singapore has, you know, Singtel in Singapore just recently announced 95% population coverage of a standalone network. And once you have the standalone network, that's the real opportunity to drive the innovation that 5G technology provides the potential for. Of course, 5G is not in isolation. It's also, you know, coming at a maturing at a time when AI, AR, VR, big data, and a number of other technologies are coming together to help make that happen. And 5G is a great contributor to that. But if I was to refer to, you know, like the progress of some other countries in Southeast Asia, you know, Indonesia is obviously moving forward. I'm still waiting to make the spectrum available. India has just finished their spectrum auctions in the last couple of days, and, you know, there's going to be a lot of speculation and comment on the prices paid. But across the rest of Southeast Asia, you know, Malaysia is still, I think, struggling to achieve its goals and vision and ambitions. You know, there's still some work to be done there with a single wholesale network, not maybe giving the outcomes that people were hoping for. And I mean, GSMA referred to in its reports last year about the challenges of not having infrastructure competition. So, you know, there is obviously very promising developments as a region, different countries, you know, struggling with some of their local issues. But overall, you know, I would say on track for 5G to have the impact that forecast, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years.
We need to also look at some of the gap of closing the digital divide, considering that 5G is being rapidly being rolled out in all these countries that you mentioned. Do you feel that not only do we have to contend with the infrastructure challenges of rolling this out, we need to also look at the content of it and the utility and the adoption of it from the users itself. It's a two-pronged affair. How do you think we're going to close the digital divide from the content usage aspect, and how do we address the challenges of the infrastructure rollout that is very much complicated and complex and deals with a lot of government regulations on top of private investment money?
Sure. I'll break that question up in a few different parts. So what is holding people back from adopting mobile? There's a few things. Digital skills is a big item. The cost of the device or cost of access. And then third is really the content or the demand, the reason for using mobile broadband. And I think it's where we need to focus, certainly in the short term, putting infrastructure and 5G rollout aside. I mean, getting people online in 4G has significant commercial, social, and personal value to getting people connected, and economic value. You know, there's certainly lots of studies that show that, you know, mobile broadband penetration is related to GDP growth, and so at the GSMA we're very focused on addressing those three issues about the cost of access and the number of countries. You know, there's very high taxes for accessing mobile and getting the device. And there's a danger that post-COVID that some nations are looking at mobile as raising taxes on mobile in some part of the ecosystem to recover the cost for post-virus recovery. And we think that's a dangerous step to take. I mean, actually getting people connected and online was a great defense for economic downturn during the virus, and so we would discourage that. Around the content, you know, that's very much around making sure there's real purposeful content and people are made aware from it. And, you know, we work together with the ecosystem and the mobile operators to help advance applications and services which can help people's lives. Everything from around utilities and connected women services and reducing the diversity gap as well in the usage. And then finally, you know, around so we had cost and we had the device around and the demand, you know, that really gets those two things. And around the skills, we work with our partners, people like Meta and everything else, to help grow digital skills. And digital skills actually has matured significantly over the last couple of years about what are digital skills. You know, so now we also work with other partners, people like Shopee and stuff, helping people get online and actually open stores and get into business, not just how do you use a mobile phone anymore.
Okay. Julian, we'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Julian of GSMA. Thanks for staying on with us. This is Notepad. I have with me on the line Julian Gorman, the head of Asia Pacific for GSMA. And of course, we're here talking about GSMA's or Global System for Mobile Telecommunication Association's survey on digital divide, on digital culture. Julian, we need to also embark on that whole idea of private investment coming into this sector. It's the most toughest, I guess, sector to speak of. Margins are thinning, costs are increasing. From the retail world, people are demanding more from their telcos. It's a highly attractive sector. It doesn't look too good if you're an MNO per se, but at the same time, everybody needs communications, everybody needs 5G or at least 4G. How do you reconcile between this whole high demand environment with the most important utility that we can speak of right now, other than perhaps electricity itself? Do you feel that this sector is going to weather this kind of storm right now?
So, I mean, there's no doubt, like, the digital ecosystem and the economic value that's accessed by mobile technology is growing, still growing very rapidly. It's a matter about where that value attributes. And you know, the mobile industry has struggled to maintain the growth of years past, but the ecosystem itself is growing very strong. As we move into 5G, the opportunity is for mobile operators to also reset how they participate in the value chain. And we are seeing some strong growth, or certainly changing fortunes, if you look at some of the advanced markets in 5G, like Korea and Japan, where mobile operators' revenue growth has turned positive again in the last couple of years after 5G launch. But as usage has also increased and the adoption has changed. But also need to remember that the massive economic value that 5G contribute to actually still comes down the line a bit after the enterprise innovations happen. And we're in that period where those first innovations are starting to happen. You know, ports are starting to turn 5G, airports, manufacturing, healthcare. As those use cases mature and trickle down more into the economy and wider use, I think you start to see mobile operators have the opportunity to participate in a bigger part of the value chain through multiple different partners and, you know, stretch out beyond basic connectivity.
One thing interesting that you speak of is the ecosystem that it develops and the value chain that the mobile operators are inside. A lot of MNOs are indeed diversifying their business lines. They are into mobile payments, digital banking. They are partnering themselves up with tech hub or innovation hub. Do you feel that this kind of diversification of horizontal diversification of business lines is actually helping to improve on their core product, which is telecommunications? Or do you feel that they are better off, you know, going on a monoline, be an MNO, and try to partner better with the ecosystem partners? Which strategy do you think is better suited for them in this current environment?
Well, I think there's a diversity, and operators are exploring different strategies. And even within a country, you know, there's not one size fits all recipe, I think. I think there's lots of, there's lots of exploration. And as I say, the 5G economic value, or the economic value attributed to 5G over the next 10 to 15 years is massive. And the ecosystem that's actually going to be affected is also significant. And it is a challenge, I think. And as I say, no fixed recipe is guarantee of success. And I think we're seeing a lot of positive movements around being involved in innovation. I think stepping back, we want to make sure that the operators have the ability to innovate and explore the ecosystem more widely. And that's why we encourage infrastructure competition as a baseline. But then also making sure that the regulatory framework is equal rules, or applies equally to to the different parts of the industry, and also other enterprise who maybe want to start participating in private networks or things like that, that it's applies equally. And so, to your answer, I don't think there's a simple right or wrong. I think it depends on the circumstances, and we wait to see how that plays out.
Okay, one more short break before we conclude our conversation with Julian of GSMA. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me on the line from Singapore, Julian Gorman of GSMA. Julian, we need to talk a little bit more about the value add outside of what we have been speaking about, i.e. for instance, issues like the metaverse. How can we drive investment, especially from the mobile operators who are looking to improve on the value add that we speak of for the past, 15, 20 minutes, and drive innovation in technologies such as the metaverse to unlock new opportunities and new challenges, and continue to deliver that essential services that keep pace with the demand from the market right now?
So I think, the APEC M360, which we're here in Singapore hosting today, has shown that, that there's a diversity of opinions, and actually solving or creating a strong digital nation requires a broad ecosystem across a number of different connectivities, and the ecosystem that's going to provide the content and the services and the innovation to drive that economic value is quite diverse. And you know, we see that when it comes to investment, the KPIs for what is success in the network rollout, I think it's starting to change. You know, the focus on population coverage in a 5G era, especially in the startup phase where you're looking to innovate and have network intensity, may not be the right KPI to measure success on. I mean, because ultimately the success of 5G is going to be economic contribution, which is not necessarily directly related to population coverage. Obviously, you know, as the network gets bigger and broader and the use cases get wider, you know, population coverage becomes a downstream effect. But certainly in this first phase, it's about making sure that there's intensity of coverage and encouraging innovation to occur across multiple sectors with focus and allowing multiple networks to focus on, you know, different use cases and mobile operators to apply their priorities where they see the business opportunity.
Of course, you're speaking at the GSMA's Mobile 360 Asia Pacific Conference. Could you tell us more about it?
So it's great to be back in person. This is our first in-person event since we last held it in Kuala Lumpur in 2019. This year, you know, we're hosting in Singapore. It's an in-person event over 2 days. The first day, we've had already over 700 people attend. We've got tracks focusing on building the network for a future digital nation. We've got a policy leaders forum, we've got a fintech summit. I think overwhelmingly the feedback is, excited to be back in person talking about, these issues and the positive direction of the technology. Obviously, post-recovery, there's a lot of talk about how, the circumstances have changed, how's the landscape changed. But there's a big focus, and today we have a big startup and investors stream, where it's a big focus on, let's see the leading use cases and the innovations from around the world and how we can apply them in a local setting to help move Southeast Asia and the region forward.
All right, fantastic, Julian. Thank you very much for joining us today. And of course, I do wish you all the best in that conference. That was Julian Gorman, the head of Asia Pacific for GSMA. There are plenty of conversations like this that can be found here on Notepad as well as on Astro Awani. Do keep in touch with many of the items that we bring to you. Just head on to astroawani.com and look for these kind of content and information there or shows you there. Until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.